Flaring lights cascade onto a black background. A title emerges. United Artists, an MGM company. A light glows brightly, then recedes. The film is in black and white. Night. A barefooted woman wearing a trench coat belted round the middle runs along a road frantically. The woman stops dejectedly as a car passes her. She sets off running again. More car headlights illuminate her tense features. The woman waves the car down, but it glides by. She runs on. As another car approaches, she stops in the middle of the road, raises her arms, and shuts her eyes tightly. The car swerves to avoid her. An open-top Jaguar sports car has skidded to a halt. The pretty woman who has short blonde hair makes her way over to the car. The driver's a handsome 30-something guy in a Mac.
You almost wrecked my car. Well? Get in.
She goes to the passenger door but can't open it.
And now, fellas, we'll hear that fine new platter by Nat King Cole. I'd rather have the blues.
The guy opens the door for her impatiently and she gets in. As the Jag pulls away with the woman, the titles roll. Victor Saville presents Mickey Spillane's Kiss Me Deadly, starring Ralph Meeker, with Albert Dekker, Paul Stewart, Juano Hernandez, Wesley Addy, and Marion Carr.
The room is dark and gloomy.
Marjorie Bennett, Mort Marshall, Fortunio Bonanova, Strother Martin, Maddie Comfort, James McCallion, Robert Cornthwaite, Silvio Minciotti, Nick Dennis, Ben Morris, Jack Elam, Paul Richards, Jesslyn Fax, James C.A., Percy Helton, Lee Snowden, Jack Lambert, Jerry Zinnemann, and introducing Maxine Cooper as Velda, Cloris Leachman as Christina, Gabby Rogers as Carver.
I try to sing a little bit.
Produced and directed by Robert Aldrich.
Is a sigh.
The man and woman drive through the night.
The thumb isn't good enough for you. You've got to use your whole body.
Do you stop if I use my thumb?
No.
She checks behind.
What's this all about? I'll make a quick guess. You're out with some guy who thought no was a three-letter word. I should have thrown you off that cliff back there. I might still do it. Where are you headed?
Los Angeles. Drop me off the first bus stop.
You always go around with no clothes on?
She looks ahead and tenses. Switching off the car radio, his brow furrows as he sees a roadblock up ahead. The Jag draws up slowly as an officer approaches a driver in front of them.
What's the trouble, officer?
Woman escaped from an asylum upstate. Young, wearing a trench coat. Seen anybody up the road that fit the description?
No, I haven't, officer.
Okay, move on.
The woman takes the man's hand and gives him a pleading look as she nuzzles into his shoulder.
Haven't seen a thing, officer. Oh, my wife's been asleep.
All right, move on.
The woman looks back surreptitiously at the cops as the Jag drives on.
Can I have my hand back now?
She releases her grip.
So you're a fugitive from a laughing house?
He forced me to go there. Took away my clothes to make me stay.
Who?
I wish I could tell you that.
She glances at headlights behind them.
I have to tell someone. When people are in trouble, they need to talk. But you know the old saying.
What I don't know can't hurt me.
She nods and smiles tensely.
This wheel doesn't feel right. It keeps pulling over.
They pull into a gas station where an attendant in a forage cap greets them.
Good evening, folks.
Check the right front wheel.
Yes, sir.
The woman gets out of the car as the attendant brings over a trolley jack. The guy then gets out of the car.
What'd you find?
A branch.
Caught in a spindle, was binding against the drum.
Oh, we must have picked it up when we were off the road back there.
Yeah? The only thing I ever pick up when I go off the road is poison ivy.
Thanks, kid.
Thank you.
The guy hands the attendant money and gets back in the car. The guy checks his watch. The woman approaches the attendant as he wheels away the jack.
Would you do me a favor, please?
Wouldn't mind at all.
Would you put a stamp on this and drop it in the mailbox for me, please?
Yes, ma'am. Anything else, ma'am?
Did you find out what was wrong with the wheel?
Oh, yeah. You picked up a piece of branch when you took that little trip off the side of the road.
The woman lowers her eyes and turns away from the smirking attendant. She goes back to the car and gets in. The attendant closes the door for her.
So long, come back again.
The attendant watches as they drive away into the night. The man stares ahead with a frown.
You're angry with me, aren't you? Sorry I nearly wrecked your pretty little car. I was just thinking how much you can tell about a person. Such simple things. Your car, for instance.
Now, what kind of a message does it send you?
You have only one real, lasting love.
Now, who could that be?
You. You're one of those self-indulgent males who thinks about nothing but his clothes, his car, himself. But you do push-ups every morning just to keep your belly hard.
You against good health or something?
I can tolerate flabby muscles in a man and make him more friendly. You're the kind of a person who never gives in a relationship, who only takes. Woman, the incomplete sex. What does she need to complete her? Why, man, of course. Wonderful man.
All right, let it go. That bus stop will be coming up pretty soon, and I don't even know your name.
You forget I'm a loony from the Laughing House. All loonies are dangerous. You ever read poetry? No, of course you wouldn't. Christina Rossetti wrote love sonnets. I was named after her.
Christina?
Yes, Mike. I got your name for the registration certificate, Mr. Hammer. Get through that bus stop, you forget you ever saw me.
She glances over her shoulder. Car headlights are behind them. She heaves a sigh.
We don't make that bus stop.
We will.
The headlights are still behind them.
If we don't, remember me.
Mike is forced off the road by a black car blocking their way. Three pairs of legs walk from the black car. In a sparsely furnished room, Christina's bare legs and feet dangle off the end of a table. Her Mac is on the floor. Mike lies on a bed frame with his eyes closed. A shiny shoed foot pushes him off the bed, and he falls face down onto the floor. Mike comes to briefly as the suited assailants talk. He sees only their feet and legs.
She's passed out.
I'll bring her to.
If you revive her, do you know what that will be? Resurrection. That's what it will be. And do you know what resurrection means? It means raise the dead. And just who do you think you are that you think you can raise the dead?
Put him in a car too?
Naturally.
The black car's front bumper pushes the tail of the Jag, which has Mike and Christina sitting in it. Their eyes are closed and their heads loll. The Jag is pushed through a wooden barrier. Mike's car plows down a hillside and explodes into flames. The shiny-shoed passenger in the black car gets out to check the scene and then returns to the car. black sedan reverses and drives away. A shimmering, blurred image of two women's faces.
Mike.
Mike lies in a bed.
Mike.
His eyes flicker open and gradually focus on a light on the ceiling. Two attractive women, one in a nurse's uniform, the other in a suit, smile down at him. He smiles at the woman in the suit.
Hi, Velda.
Hi.
She kisses him on the lips.
You're never around when I need you.
You never need me when I'm around.
Patsy. 5 minutes, that's all you've got. Nurse?
The nurse leaves with the doctor who's led a man in.
Hi, Flatfoot.
Hi. 3 days ago, I was figuring I'd have to finance a new tux to bury the corpse.
3 days? How am I doing?
You're doing all right. A couple of weeks, you'll walk out of here. Can you remember, Mike? How it happened, the whole thing?
A drowsy Mike, his eyes half shut, blinks and shakes his head. The faces of Velda and Flatfoot blur. A sunny day. Mike walks out of the hospital with Velda on his arm.
I never thought I'd smell that again.
Two women mince by.
Oh, look at all the goodies.
I have a cab.
Mr. Hammer, you won't need the cab. We'd like to ask you a few questions.
That figures. See you later.
Flatfoot, Pat, stands outside an office door marked Interstate Crime Commission.
Why don't you come in? Maybe a while.
No, I'll wait here.
We're not getting very far, are we, Mr. Hammer? Well, now we have most of the facts. All we need is a little more fill-in.
I almost got myself killed, and all he wants is a little more fill-in.
Is it too much to ask for your cooperation?
And make him try it again?
You'll be given full protection. Maybe we'll have better luck with some more elementary questions. Your full name, please, Mr. Hammer.
Michael Hammer, 10401 Wilshire Boulevard, Los Angeles, California.
Now, just what do you do for a living?
According to our information, he calls himself a private investigator.
His specialty is divorce cases.
He's a bedroom dick.
He gets information against the wife. Then he makes a deal with the wife to get evidence against the husband.
Thus, playing both hands against the middle.
Just how do you achieve all this? You crawl under beds?
Nothing so primitive.
He has a secretary. At least that's what he calls her.
What's her name, Mr. Hammer?
Velda Wickman.
She's a very attractive young woman. Real woo-bait. Lives like a princess. He sicks her onto the husbands, and before you know it, he's got his evidence, and he's ready for the big squeeze.
Who do you sick onto the wives, Mr. Hammer?
That's his department.
All right, you've got me convinced. I'm a real stinker. Now, if that's all you got on your minds, I'd like to get along home.
Yes, I know. You're anxious to get back to your life's work. You're free to go.
Mike gets up wearily.
Open a window.
Mike leaves.
Thanks for waiting, Pat.
Yeah.
She was a cute kid. Had the nicest way of needling a guy. There'll be a long pause before those characters get a line on who killed her.
Law isn't fast enough. You could do it a lot better, is that it? Now look, Mike. Who do you think you are?
What's the pitch, Pat?
Pat retrieves his cigarettes from Mike.
An ordinary little girl gets killed and rings bells all the way to Washington. It's gotta be a pitch.
I'll give you a bit of advice. Too many people like you have contempt for anything that has to do with the law. You'd like to take it into your own hands. But when you do that, you might as well be living in a jungle.
I picked up a girl. If she hadn't gotten in my way, I wouldn't have stopped. She must be connected with something big.
Mike, why don't you tell us what you know? Then step aside like a nice fella and let us do our job.
What's in it for me?
A lift door opens and they step back to let the occupants out. Pat then follows Mike into the lift. A cab pulls into Nick's general repairing. Nick, working in a pit under a car, climbs out.
Mikey! Ande Mikey! Cogiendo un buen accidente que se ha puesto atrás con el saco pago, meñi mumia! Hey, Sammy, look, my friend just returned from the grave!
Hey, Mike!
Ha ha! Va-va-voom! Ha ha! I'm sure glad you're back, Mike. Like Lazarus rose out from the grave. Now tell me, what happened? What did you do, huh? Did you drive too fast with that new rod?
Where is it? Velda says you were going to pick it up.
Ah, there's nothing to pick up, Mike. You ought to have seen that beautiful and pretty little rod of yours. All torn up, scrap, junk. Never going to go ba-ba-boom no more. Break my heart. Anyway, you're all right now, huh?
A little shaky.
A little shaky, huh? And you know what we're going to do? We're going to pick a couple of cute little Greek girls. What I mean, ba-ba-boom! Ha-ha! Freaky pow! Oh, forgot to tell you. There are some guys looking for you, asking a lot of questions.
What kind of guys?
Tough guys. Very tough guys, Mike. Ah, forget it. Look, I'm glad you're back. You look swell, and listen, and I'll see you tomorrow. And take care of yourself, will you? Huh?
Mike gets back in the cab.
Are you all right, Mike?
I don't know yet. Maybe not.
Nick, standing at the cab window, looks solemn. The cab pulls away.
Hey, Sammy, what does it mean, maybe not?
Yeah, who knows what he means?
Two heavies in suits and hats sit in the black sedan. They watch Mike's cab pull up across the road. Mike, a clean-cut-looking guy with short hair swept back, gets out and enters a smart apartment block. As he walks through the glass doors and down the entrance hallway, he stops and looks back over his shoulder pensively at the black sedan. Hands in pockets, Mike saunters on to a lift and presses the call button. On a landing, Mike edges along a wall and peers round a corner. He then crosses to door 504, unlocks it, and jumps aside as he pushes it open. Mike's eyes sweep around the living room as he edges into his apartment and checks behind the door before closing it. Mike opens a nearby closet door and cautiously checks inside. He closes the door again. Passing three pegs with camera cases hanging from them, Mike slowly walks down two steps into the living room come dining room area. The room is furnished in a modern 50s style. A large television stands in a corner near to a record player. There's a drinks trolley with an ice bucket and glasses on it. Chairs and a sofa surround a low, glass-topped coffee table, which stands in front of a long, letterbox-shaped fireplace. Mike heads cautiously across the room and through an open bedroom door. He re-emerges when the phone rings. A large tape machine installed in a wall records the caller.
This is Crestview, 54124. Mr. Hammer, whom you are calling, is not available at present. If you wish to leave a record of your call, please state your message at the sound of the tone.
Hello, Mike. Just checking to see if you got home. Please call me when you...
Velda?
Oh, I'm glad you're there. Are you all right?
Sure, why?
I'll be right over.
A pensive-looking Mike replaces the receiver. Dressed in a smart suit and neatly knotted tie, Mike puts his hands in his trouser pockets and walks over to an open window. Looking ill at ease, he stares down at lanes of traffic rushing along a highway. Later, Mike and the glamorous Velda stand kissing in the living room.
What did they want?
They asked a lot of questions.
What kind of questions?
Questions. When you leave, tell Nick...
What do you want me to tell him?
You know, just to hold the soft part of your arms as a meal. Tell him to drop his car off tonight and pick it up in the morning.
He draws back a little.
What's in the folder?
A fella named Ray Diker called up while you were in the hospital. He wants to see you, and I thought you'd want me to check up on him. Answer it.
Mike? Pat, official business this time.
Maybe you'll go away.
Pat Pat lets himself in.
Go ahead, don't mind me.
Pat takes a document from his jacket pocket.
I'm revoking your private investigator's license. Also, your gun permit.
Mike snatches the documents.
If I catch you snooping around with a gun in your hand, I'll throw you in jail.
Pat goes to the drinks trolley.
I don't think you'd like it in jail.
Who's Ray Diker?
Pat opens a bottle.
What do you do with this guy?
He was a reporter on the news, wasn't he? He used to write a science column. Why did he drop out?
Pat slugs back a drink.
I hear your friends were over to question him, too.
I gotta say it, he's got a nose. He can sniff out information like nobody I ever saw.
Pat refills.
What else did you hear?
Couldn't find him. He dropped out of sight. Science editor of a newspaper drops out of sight and nobody knows why.
Mike opens the front door and leans against it. Pat approaches him, glass in hand.
If you know anything, you better tell me, Mike.
If I knew anything, I would.
They stare at each other.
Sure you would.
They exchange sly smiles. Then Pat gives his glass to Mike and leaves. Mike, in rolled-up shirt sleeves, puts the glass on the coffee table.
You ought to tell him, Mike.
Did Diker leave an address?
Oh, somewhere over on Flower Street. But if I were you, I wouldn't go.
That tape I made of you and Loverboy got lost.
There goes your case.
Call him up and set up another session. Tell him you're sorry. You want to make up for all the pain you gave him. Give him some of that sincerity. Oh, what'd you find out about the girl?
Christina Georgina Rossetti, poetess, English, born 1830, died 1894. Your Christina was being held in that hospital for interrogation.
Who by, the feds or state?
That they wouldn't tell me. What's the point of all this if it's any of my business?
She told me if I dropped her off at the bus station, I could forget her. But if she didn't make it, she said, remember me.
Velda throws aside the magazine she's reading.
So remember her. She's dead.
Velda goes over to Mike, who's lying on the sofa.
But I'm not dead. Hey, remember me?
Yeah. I remember you from somewhere. Weren't you supposed to call that fellow Mr., what's his name?
Friendly?
Her face is up close to Mike's as he nods. She moves away.
It's my name for him. Mr. Friendly. He certainly was friendly.
Maybe he'll give you some of that nice dialogue again. That honey talk.
She glowers.
That tape sure was nice.
She takes her bag.
Do me a favor, will you? Keep away from the windows. Somebody might blow you a kiss.
Looking fed up, she leaves with the file. Mike sits up on the sofa and pensively puts a hand to his chin. He turns and glances at the open window. Day turns to night. Mike is lying on the sofa again. He switches on a lamp, gets up and goes over to his jacket, which is hanging on the back of a chair near the now closed window. Mike takes a notepad out of a pocket and goes over to his desk with it. He switches on another lamp. On the pad is written Ray Diker, 121 Flower Street, Los Angeles, California. Mike, wearing a suit and tie, pulls up at a curbside in an open-topped MG sports car. A man in a fedora stands in the shadows watching him. Mike gets out of his car and walks over to an old guy at a newspaper stand.
"121?"
"Solid."
The ferret-faced guy in the brimmed hat strikes a match on a door and lights a cigarette. Remaining in the shadows and keeping close to the buildings, he tails Mike, who ambles down a street. Hands in pockets, Mike sucks his teeth and wears a calculating expression. He approaches a street vendor.
popcorn?
Yeah, how much?
Damn, like always. Thank you.
Mike glances behind him surreptitiously as he hands the vendor money and walks on into the night. A nearby clock reads 2:20. Mike stares straight ahead as he walks, eating popcorn. He stops at a cigarette vending machine. The guy tailing is reflected in the mirror-like metal of the machine. Mike gets a good look at him and walks on, pocketing his cigarettes and eating popcorn. The guy speeds up as he follows Mike. The heavy produces a flick knife. Mike wheels round and wrenches his arm up his back.
Drop the knife! Drop the knife! Drop the knife!
He does. Then Mike whacks him to the ground. Dragging the guy up by his suit lapels, Mike repeatedly bashes the guy's head against a wall. Staring at Mike, the dazed-looking heavy sinks to the ground. Mike turns away and picks up the flick knife. He closes the blade and walks on with a slight limp. The heavy gets up, follows Mike groggily, and lunges at him. Mike whacks the guy, sending him rolling and somersaulting down a long flight of stone steps. Mike watches, then turns away with a sneer. Street lights glow in the night as Mike walks briskly down a sidewalk. He stops outside a gate, takes the notepad out of his inside jacket pocket, and checks the address. A sign announces rooms for rent. Mike heads on through the open gate and up flights of wooden steps to a door on a landing outside a rambling wooden house. A man sits reading a newspaper. The man shakily puts a cigarette down in an ashtray. He gets up nervously and heads across the dingy room to the door, which he opens a crack, revealing half of his bruised face. He opens the door wide.
Yeah, what do you want?
Beat me. Force your way in.
I want in. What's a big idea? Who do you think you are?
Make it sound good.
Mike enters and shuts the door.
Make it sound good.
What's on your mind?
You were with her the night she died. She knew she was going to get killed. She must have talked to you. Told you.
Told me what?
If you knew, you'd be afraid like she was afraid. Like I am. You better go.
She told me her name was Christina. Christina what?
Bailey. Christina Bailey.
Her address, the last place she lived.
325 Bunker Hill.
Mike opens the door.
If you change your mind and want to talk, get in touch with my secretary. She'll call me.
Mike leaves. It's still night. Mike pulls up at a sidewalk in his MG and gets out. An old guy carries a trunk on his back. It's attached to a strap round his forehead and rests on a frame around his hips. Mike walks behind him and takes some of the weight of the trunk. The old guy suddenly realizes he's being helped.
Oh, you're the one. Every time when I pick up the trunk, I take a deeper breath. Makes you stronger, deeper breath. This time I think, oh, you breathe good deep. Trunk feels very light. By golly, old man, you are becoming very strong, I think. But you are the one.
He puts down the trunk.
Moving somebody in?
Move in, move out. Always the people come and go. One a place that they never leave. You know, 63 years I live in one a place. The house of my body. Move in when I born, move out when I die. You bet. Yes, sir.
Can I help you?
Oh, no, grazie. I mean, thank you very much. If you help, then afterward all the thing gets heavier. I go and get to the other one.
Mike turns to the front door of the house they've arrived at. A middle-aged couple open up.
What do you want?
I want to see the super.
What can I do for you?
There's a card on the mailbox there, Christina Bailey.
The police have already been through her apartment.
He told you the police have already been through her apartment.
I want to go through her apartment.
Ask him who he is, Horace.
Tell her to shut up.
Shut up.
Can I help you?
I don't be fooled so easy this time. He's the younger fellow, my deeper breath. Always willing to help an old man moving people around. Because people, oh, they always move. They never stand still. Move from here, from there, and move all the time.
Her lease still has a month to go, but the police said I could rent it.
In Christina's rooms.
Whose stuff is this?
Well, we rent it furnished, but she fixed it up to suit herself.
A black guy packs books in the room. Mike turns the knob on a radio, then saunters over to a birdcage.
No bird?
Her roommate let her die.
What's her name?
Carver. Lily Carver. She moved out a couple of days ago. All of a sudden, the middle of the night. Didn't say where.
The radio has warmed up.
She always had a tune to that station.
Mike scans the sitting room with its shelves full of books and many paintings on the walls. He walks towards the open bedroom door, then stops and stares for a moment. He then goes into the room and over to a bedside table. On it is a lit lamp, a clock showing 20 past midnight, and a book entitled Sonnets of Christina Georgina Rossetti. Mike opens the book at a point where a marker has been put and glances at the page. Looking pensive, he shuts the book and walks back into the sitting room with it. Mike nods to Horace and leaves. As Mike comes out of the imposing house, the old man is standing by his truck.
Hey, mister.
Mike goes over to him.
Look, mister. You make a deeper breath for me. I'm gonna tell you a little secret. The other girl, the roommate of Miss Christina, she tells me not to say. Afraid she is. Like somebody's afraid to die. I moved her. I'll tell you where.
He whispers in Mike's ear.
Buonanotte.
Buonanotte.
Mike's car is parked in darkness outside a small, dingy entrance to a hotel. Mike walks up a flight of stairs in the hotel to a landing. He stops to check a door number, then walks on to another door. A blonde lying on a bed aims a pistol at the door.
Come in.
Mike enters and freezes briefly.
Who are you?
My name is Mike Hammer, if it matters.
What do you want?
I was with Christina the night she was killed. They tried to kill me too. If you like, I'll show you the scars.
How'd you find me?
Picked up a thread. Anybody could do it. Mind if I sit down while you're making up your mind?
She aims the gun at him as he sits on the bed.
Christina was my friend.
The bird in the cage, what happened to it?
She puts the gun down.
It was a nice bird. You stayed out of my hand.
You let it die. Why'd you let it die?
Lily fidgets childishly.
It reminded me of her every time it sang. She was a good kid. She was lots of fun. We worked together, a couple of jobs. So she got sick. That's when I noticed that she started to change.
She gets up.
You get on a merry-go-round, you think you can get off any old time. But then it starts going too fast. She was scared. She was more and more scared. She was afraid to go out. She'd go to the movies once in a while or out for groceries, but never very far. Police came around. They asked questions, lots of questions. And they took her away. After a while, I had a feeling someone was watching the place. And those men came.
What did they want?
I didn't stick around to find out.
Why was Christina so afraid? It's all right, you can trust me.
Lily fiddles nervously with the tie around her bathrobe as Mike heads to the door and then turns back to her.
You want to get even for what happened to Christina, don't you?
Lily nods.
See what I can do.
Mike leaves. Lily, who has short blonde hair, pouts childishly as she lies down on the bed again. In his apartment, Mike stands looking at the volume of sonnets pensively, then throws them down onto the coffee table. He goes to his desk and switches on a radio. Ignoring the phone, Mike paces.
This is Crestview, 54124. Mr. Hammer, whom you are calling, is not available at present. If you wish to leave a record of your call, please state your message at the sound of the tone.
Good evening, Mr. Hammer. You probably will wonder who this is, but it does not matter. What does matter is that your work has been interrupted, your car wrecked. Your life has been ruffled, to put it mildly. If you had not stopped to pick up Christina, not any of these things would have happened. So let's pretend you did not pick her up.
So what happens if I pretend?
Ah, so there you are, Mr. Hammer. Why, nothing will happen. Your life will go on as serenely as before. As a token of our intentions, look in front of your apartment tomorrow morning.
Mike holds the receiver away from him and studies it pensively. Nick approaches Mike's MG, which is parked in sunlight. He spots a swish open-topped sports car behind it. He shuts the MG's door and goes to the swish Chevrolet Corvette. He picks up a document on the seat, reads it, and then climbs into the driver's seat.
That Mike, he wrecks one car and goes out and buys another one, just like that. Wow. Ba-ba-boom! Oh, someday I'm going to get me a car just like this. I'm going to get in and I'm going to drive. Oh, shines like a million. Hey, even the keys are in.
Nick checks about him.
I think I'll go around the block and come back before he wakes up. Why not? Pow!
Nick! Huh? Don't touch anything.
I didn't touch it. I didn't touch anything.
Turn that key. It's the last thing you'd ever do.
What?
Open the hood.
The hood?
Yeah. Look under it.
Nick releases a catch and gets out of the car to look under the hood.
No, the other side.
The other side.
Turn around the starter. You see anything?
Yeah.
Disconnect it and take it out.
Nick rips out sticks of explosive.
Is this what you mean?
Yeah, torpedo. Turn the key and boom, no more Nick.
Wow!
The hood.
The hood. Wow, that was close.
They get in.
Boy.
Nick reaches for the key.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Are you really sure?
Yeah, I said I'm sure.
You sure?
Mike drives off with Nick in his overalls and holding the explosive. The car glides along to a huge crossroad and turns left onto a wide road.
Bop, bop, bop. My mustache. My father's mustache. Let's go to the freeway. I want to see how this little bird flies.
We better stop off at the garage first.
Why?
That's the one they expected us to find.
You mean there's another one? You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
You sure?
At Nick's garage.
Find anything?
Nick's working in a pit under the Chevy Corvette. He carefully pulls out a cylindrical container with wires round it. Nick climbs out of the pit and Mike takes the container. Sammy steps back.
That's it, the sweet little kiss-off. It's a bond connected to the speedometer. Car goes slow, nothing happens. But out in the country where you open her up wide...
Uh-huh.
Mike nods and hands the container back.
Hey, Nick.
What?
Mike gets in the Corvette.
How'd you like to have a little rod just like this one?
Mine? All mine?
Down to the last cutter pin.
What do I have to do? Name it, and it's done.
Mike glances at Sammy.
Can you find out who souped her up?
A cinch. I know the place at Culver City. I'll dig around and ask a few questions. Ba-ba-boom.
Ba-ba-boom.
Nick and Sammy watch Mike go.
Nicky, you should ask what it's worth to him. What he's going to get out of it.
Don't bother me, small fry. You play your guitar, Sammy boy, and I'll drive my car. Pow!
Gee, Nicky, you're gonna get yourself in a lot of trouble.
Mike enters an office-cum apartment with a black and white tiled floor. He goes to the open doorway of another room where Velda is warming up at a bar with a mirrored wall behind it. Mike watches her and lights a cigarette. He lifts the arm off the record. Velda looks disapproving. Mike puts the arm back down.
Did you call your friendly, Mr. Friendly?
Yes, he awaits me anxiously.
Then call him back and cancel it.
She stops briefly.
We're going to stir away from these penny-ante divorce cases for a while. I got a line on something better. That girl I picked up was mixed up with something big.
And a cut of something big? Could be something big.
I want you to find out all you can about her.
First you find a little thread. A little thread leads you to a string. And the string leads you to a rope.
She swings round a pole.
And from the rope you hang by the neck. What kind of a girl was she, this friend of yours, Christina? I only asked because Ray Dacre phoned up. He left two names. He said you might check up on them.
Where are they?
In my typewriter.
Mike goes to her typewriter. A miniature poodle sits on a cushion on her desk. Mike reads the names on the paper. Leopold Kowalski, Harvey Wallace, Over Bomber Cafe, Cowinger Street. Nicholas Raimondo, Carmen Trivago, Hillcrest Hotel.
Avavum says that in Greek your name would be Mikhail Sefiros.
Velda kisses him hungrily on the neck. Mike ignores her.
But under any other name would you be as sweet?
Kowalski.
She withdraws.
Kowalski.
She exercises again.
He was a professional fighter. His first name was Lee. Couldn't get anything on Raimondo. Don't know what he was.
Why do you keep saying was?
Mike pours himself a drink.
They both knew your Christina. They both died the same way she did.
How's that?
The way you almost died. Traffic accident?
She approaches Mike sultrily.
One fell out of a cab, and the other was run over by a truck.
She licks the towel she's holding and rubs lipstick off his neck. Mike walks away.
Who's Carmen Trivago?
Carmen Trivago, a poor man's Caruso, an unemployed opera singer in search of an opera. Raimondo's friend.
And who's Harvey Wallace?
He drove the truck that ran over Kowalski.
Mike dines with Wallace and his family.
I was going down Washington Boulevard. You know where they're building that freeway? It's kind of late. I had a long day. Winter. You know how it gets dark early. I had my lights on. I had them on. I know that. The streets are jammed down there around quitting time. This after 7. Streets empty. I was going under a bridge. Going, you know? This guy come out of nowhere.
Did he step out or run out? Maybe he was pushed.
Yeah, pushed. More like he was pushed.
Wallace shoots a look at his young kids. In a gym, a muscular black guy works out on a punch ball. Mike climbs a steep flight of stairs and enters the large gym area where young men are shadow boxing and working on punch bags. Mike ambles over to a black guy who wears a trilby and holds a cigar between his teeth as he watches a protege.
Hello, Mike.
Hi, Eddie.
How do you like my new boy, Kid Nino? Isn't he pretty? Doesn't he move pretty?
Sure, just like all your fighters, Eddie.
All right, kid, shadow box around. I'm showing you off to a friend. Isn't he beautiful? Isn't he lovely? Look at the way he moves.
Sure, he's great, Eddie. But the night he fights his big fight, he won't be able to punch his way out of a paper bag.
Why not, Mike?
You'll sell him out like you sold out all the others.
Not this one, Mike.
Wait until the odds build up, until you can't resist.
No, Mike.
When does he go?
Tomorrow night, main bout. He's a winner, so it'll be short money. Bet all you can. Bet your shirt.
It'd pay more if he lost. You sure he isn't going to lay down and die?
On my word, Mike.
Now, that's the kind of a bet I like. Thanks a lot. Oh. What I really came over for was to find out what you know about a kid that used to fight under the name of Lee Kowalski.
Eddie's cigar droops.
What about him?
Oh, come on, don't give me that. You've been around. You know just about everybody.
About him, I don't know.
He was killed in an accident, but it wasn't really an accident.
Eddie starts and takes the cigar out of his mouth.
Two fellas. They came in here. Charlie Max and Sugar Smallhouse. They asked me if anybody come around asking questions about Lee Kowalski, what do I know? I looked at their faces. You know what I said? I said, I don't know anything. They said to keep that in mind, and they'd make it worth my while.
You'd sell the gold out of your mother's teeth. Okay, how much did they give you? I'll top it.
You can't top this. They said they'd let me breathe.
Eddie raises his eyebrows and looks wide-eyed at Mike. Mike considers. Taking change from his jacket pocket, he saunters over to a payphone on a wall.
Hello, Pat Murphy, please. Tell Mike Hammer's calling. Hello, Pat. What do you know about a couple of nice fellows named Charlie Max and Sugar Smallhouse? Never mind what I know. All you have to tell me is whose whistle they jumped to.
Mike's face drops.
Carl Everwell.
Yeah?
At a private outdoor pool, a guy is on the phone and a radio is on.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We are coming to you direct from Warwick Downs.
We're
running on the Warwick Handicap.
Carl says we'll take half. Say, how are they doing on the 5th of Warwick? They coming out yet? Exclusively. We can get on a bet, huh?
Give me a light, Sugar.
Don't bother me, cheese kid.
Warwick Handicap. Come on, Sugar.
Give us $1,000 on Big Boy and the 5th, huh? On the note.
You gonna light my cigarette for me, Sugar?
Hello! Dames are worse than flies. Are you gonna play cards, Charlie, or ain't you?
Mike drives through a grand open gate and pulls up. A car with a blonde in pulls up behind him. Mike looks across a lawn to the swimming pool party. The glamorous blonde approaches him.
Hello. Well, this is a coincidence.
Mike gets out.
How do you do, ma'am?
How do I do? Crazy.
She kisses him. Mike wraps his arms around her and responds. She draws back.
Don't be afraid, I won't bite.
You don't taste like anybody I know. But it's all right. In fact, it's wonderful. Come on, crazy.
She takes his hand as they walk.
Second?
Okay.
They kiss passionately again. Then she looks up at him sultrily.
Sure we haven't met before?
Never.
Who are you?
Who am I?
Who are you?
I'm Friday. I'd have been named Tuesday if I'd been born on Tuesday. I'm Carl's sister, half-sister. Same mother, different father. You know, you're not like the others. Carl's friends, I mean.
Well, maybe that's because I'm not his friend.
Oh, wonderful. And you can be my friend. All mine, nothing to do with Carl.
There they go. They come away from the gate, almost
they're
even
big,
as Big Boy moving
hairy
to the front.
And
Gala act is second, old memories
they
is
chew
third.
Long black cigars
fourth.
And they talk
and
loud.
Tonight, around the clubhouse
like
turn
it.
Is Mountain Knight in front by one length.
But I like
old
you.
Memory between horses is second the neck. Gala
if you like me, why don't you invite me into the house?
Will you come into my house? Rock,
why not?
Charlie.
What's that horse doing? Walking or something? He ain't even been on the crawl. Jen.
Jen. Gin? You don't pay no attention to cards and he kills me with his gin.
Friday pours a drink.
Here's to friendship.
Friendship.
They sit at a kitchen bar.
I've lots of friends.
I bet you have.
I'm not hard to get along with, really, I'm not. I can be a very good friend. Can you be my friend?
What do I have to do?
She strokes him.
You want to be a close friend. Ask me something.
And no matter what it is, the answer is yes, huh?
Maybe.
Let's see how good you are at spelling. Can you spell the word no?
N-O. Spells no.
That's a good girl. Now you practice saying that. Because one of the best ways to be friendly is to know when to say no.
Looking out of the window.
Say, your brother wouldn't be wearing blue suede shoes by any chance, would he?
Hardly. He's more the black moccasin type.
You know, it's a hot day and I'm beginning to feel kind of warm. Why don't you invite me for a dip in the pool?
Sure. Just get all wet.
Carl looks up from playing patience by the pool.
Hey, look who's here.
Everyone turns to look at Friday and Mike.
You'll find a suit inside. I'll wait. The morning line are doing joyous
dances of victory. As the poolside radio blares, Friday, in a strappy dress, goes to join Carl, who watches Mike stroll off.
Are you kidding?
Why not?
Mike enters a changing room.
Charlie, Sugar.
Both men, wearing swimming shorts, get up. Sugar is bare-chested while Charlie wears a fancy shirt. In the changing room, Mike surveys a line of shoes and socks, amongst which are shiny black shoes. Carl's henchmen enter the changing room stealthily. Hearing the door, Mike wheels round. Sugar goes for him, but Mike decks him. Charlie backs out hurriedly. Charlie's craggy face crumples with a look of terror as he stares back at the changing room. Carl shakes his head and smiles despairingly as he turns to Friday.
Send him into the house.
Carl gets up. Mike walks through the luxurious house while Carl's on the phone in the sitting room.
How do I know what he knows? Well, I know that he's here and he's snooping around. All right, I'll be polite.
Mr. Revelo?
In here. I'll call you back. Hello, Mr. Hammer. You handle yourself pretty well.
I figure it's a good thing to speak a lot of languages. Any country you go to, you can take care of yourself.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can speak my language, huh?
Like putting torpedoes in gifts?
I'll admit that was a little crude. We keep underestimating you. Frankly, I don't know what's in your mind. What do you want, Mr. Hammer?
Well, yesterday I was looking for a thread. Today I'm looking for a piece of string.
And tomorrow, who knows, huh, Mr. Hammer? You don't even know what you're looking for.
Tell me.
Trouble. That's what you're looking for, Mr. Hammer, trouble. You know how lucky you are? That drop off the cliff didn't kill you. The torpedo should have. Or Sugar. What'd you do to him anyway? You scared Charlie half to death. Look, Mike, I like you. I like the way you handle yourself. You seem like a reasonable man. Why don't we make a deal? What's it worth to you to turn your considerable talents back to the gutter you crawled out of?
Name a price.
And you'll try to emphasize, huh? Oh, you're cute. You ought to know better than anyone what it's worth.
I set my fee according to the case, and the longer I look at this one, the higher it gets.
Oh, it does, huh?
Maybe you'd like to make an exploratory offer just to get the ball rolling.
Okay, Mr. Hammer. It's been nice talking to you, Mr. Hammer. Wrap around again sometime.
When I do, maybe I'll have a better notion of what my fee is.
It's too late to set a fee, Mr. Hammer. Suddenly, it's too late.
Carl walks out. Tram cars pass over a track above an alley. Mike's car pulls up at the foot of two flights of steep steps in the alley. Mike takes his notepad out of his inside jacket pocket and checks it. He puts the pad away again and gets out of the car. Mike climbs one of the long flights of steps. A guy's in a phone box at the top.
Oh, I've been out here 3 times already, and this thing keeps rushing me off. Well, I gotta make a living, too. I'll send somebody else. How much can a guy take? Well, look, I tell you, I'm not coming out again. You can get somebody else. There's other guys around here.
Mike enters the down-at-heel Hillcrest Hotel.
Taking a heart attack walking up here.
Who invited you?
Carmen Trivago, what room?
Follow your ear.
Thank you.
Mike jogs up a wooden banistered staircase. Reaching a dark, narrow landing, he listens at one door, then moves on to listen at room 2 at the end of the corridor. Mike reaches for the door handle. The door isn't locked and he enters. The room is shambolic and pokey. Washing, including long johns, hangs on a line strung across the room. Trivago, a balding man in a fancy waistcoat, stands at a net-curtained window singing. His back is to Mike, who watches and smiles as Trivago sings along with the record with great gusto. Trivago turns with a flourish and, still not aware of Mike, goes to the record player for the finale.
Oh, he loved her. She's dead.
He sings, il maestro. Magnifico, che bella voce. Bello, bello.
Hey, bravo, bravissimo.
Who are you?
I hear you're a friend of Nicholas Raimondo.
Raimondo?
Yeah, that's right, Raimondo.
I know nothing, nothing.
It's quite a stack of records you got here.
Oh, yes.
Hey, Caruso's Pagliacci.
Caruso Pagliacci, il maestro.
That's a collector's item.
A collector's item, yeah.
Mike breaks the record.
Please, what you wanted to know, I will tell you. I will tell you. Raimondo is my friend, you know. A very sad friend, always is a sad. He's a, how you call, engineer scientist. Very smart, very bright. Very sad.
He was murdered. Why was he murdered?
I don't know.
What was he so sad about?
Well, for the way the world is, you see, very sad. He says to me, oh, I'm a very intelligent Trivago, but I'm a very stupid. I'm a very rich, I'm a very poor. I have a little secret, and it's very important, and it's not important at all.
What did he mean by that?
Well, when I ask him, he says that it's a riddler without an answer. I think he's making the joke, but when he's dead, I know it's not a joke. Somewhere he has a secret.
How do you know that?
Well, they come, the ones they kill him. They want something small, something he can hide where they don't find. And they ask, where is it? I don't know.
Mike switches the record player on again.
It's a lovely record.
Mike leaves. Trivago looks troubled. Mike walks along a dimly lit landing to the door of Lily's room. He opens the door, scans the dark room, and leaves again. As he heads for the staircase, Lily looks up from a flight below.
Mike!
He looks over the banister. Wearing her toweling robe, she runs up towards him.
They came last night, right after you left. I heard them. I hid in the basement.
They think you know something.
But I don't.
Tell them that.
Look, I've got to get out of here.
Yeah, if they found you once, they'll find you again. I'm going down to my car. When you hear the horn, come running.
Mike hurries down a steep flight of stairs towards the hotel exit. Lily waits nervously on the landing for his signal. As soon as she hears the horn, Lily races down the long staircase. She hurries out of the Jalisco Hotel and over to Mike's car. She gets in and hides beneath the tonneau cover over the passenger seat. Mike does a U-turn and speeds off into the night. Nick's merrily working on a car at the garage when Mike pulls in.
Mikey!
What happened?
Well, I went to Calva City. Like I told you, they didn't know nothing. But they were very interested. They wanted to know why I asked.
What did you tell them?
Nothing.
Look, Nick. Huh? I've got to drop something off, but I'll be back. We'll go together.
Right.
Mike drives off with Lily still under the tonneau. Nick skips back to a black sedan and slides beneath it on a crawler board. Feet in snazzy black shoes walk towards Nick, who looks up.
Oh, hiya! Anything I can do for you, mister? Well, I'm busy right now. Hey, what are you doing there?
The guy's hand moves the trolley jack and the car falls on Nick. Mike enters his flat with Lily. He switches on the light.
Anything you can use, you'll find in the closet until we can get you some clothes. You can have the bedroom.
Where will you sleep?
Oh, I'll take the couch. If you want any coffee, the kitchen's in...
Lily puts her arms around Mike's waist. She kisses him. Mike withdraws after a moment and rests his hands on her shoulders.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lily snuggles up to him.
Okay, you've made your point. You're welcome.
He moves away.
Mike? Mike! Why did you come back tonight?
In your absence, there have been no calls.
You changed your mind. Something changed it for you. What was it?
You say you don't know a thing.
It's true. I don't.
But they think you do, or they wouldn't be after you. Maybe that's worth something.
He heads for the front door.
Keep the door chained and don't answer the phone. They'll think I've hidden you away somewhere safe. They won't know you're here.
But if they pay you off, you'll tell them. Then where will I be? Mike! You can't do that! Mike! Mike!
Mike strides off down the corridor. Lily, in bare feet and bathrobe, watches him forlornly, then goes back inside. There's a confused and lackluster expression in Lily's eyes as she fixes the chain and checks the door's locked. Mike's car headlights shine out as he pulls up on the forecourt of Nick's garage. He gets out of the car and goes inside. Sammy sits by Nick.
Nick, oh, Carla. Oh, Nick.
Sammy holds Nick's hand.
They kill Nick, Mike. Somebody, they kill Nick. No more of them.
Mike walks away solemnly.
No more of them.
Mike enters Velder's swish apartment cum office. Velder is asleep in a large bed with drapes above it. Mike sits on the edge of the bed.
Velder?
He shakes her gently, but she doesn't stir. He switches on a lamp.
Velder?
Velder, who has short dark hair and sensuous features, turns over. She comes to slowly, then smiles adoringly when she sees Mike leaning over her.
Hello, Mike.
Velder kisses Mike eagerly. He doesn't respond.
What is it? What kind of trouble are you in this time? Yes, yes, you are. I can see it. I'm glad. I'm always glad when you're in trouble because then you always come to me. What is it, Mike?
Next then.
Nick?
Jack slipped and the car came down on him.
Is that what really happened?
He's doing a couple of jobs for me.
And he got it? Like all your friends are going to get it one of these days? What is it you're after, Mike?
Something Nicholas Romano had and the girl knew about. Something very valuable.
Is it worth Nick's life or Christina's or Romano's or Kowalski's or mine?
Mike gets up.
Or Lily Carver's? Christina's roommate. She's up in my apartment. They tried to get her last night.
They. A wonderful word. And who are they? They are the nameless ones who kill people for the great what's-it. Does it exist? Who cares? Everyone everywhere is so involved in the fruitless search for what?
In the sitting room.
Why don't you turn her over to Pat? It's his job to protect her, if she needs protection. Or to question her, if that's what's needed. Why are you always trying to make a noise like a cop?
What were you doing in bed so early?
Oh, I had a few drinks. I'm trying to sleep off a hangover. I met your friend Ray Diker over at Toscio's this afternoon. He pointed out some joker at the bar, a dealer in abstract art or something. I went over and just happened to pick him up. Make your ears stand up?
She kneels beside him on the sofa.
He dropped a few names. Want to hear them?
He sips milk.
Carl Avello, you know, but Dr. Soberin. Does that do anything for you? This joker says there's a new art in the world, and this doctor's starting a collection.
What kind of a collection?
I don't know. He tried to date me. With a few drinks and one thing leading to another, I suppose I could get some more information about the doctor. Do you want me to date him? Well?
Well, what?
Well, what do you think?
I think I'd like to get my hands on whoever killed Nick.
She secretly flinches.
You want to avenge the death of your dear friend. How touching. How sweet. How nicely it justifies your quest for the great what's-it. Why don't you leave, Mike? Before I change my mind. Besides, I'm going to need all the rest I can get if I'm going to have any strength to fight off my newfound, my bosom friend.
She goes back into her bedroom and shuts the door. Mike gets up and makes to leave.
Mike. Meet me at the Pigalle. 2 o'clock. Huh?
Okay.
A singer at the Pigalle.
The night is mighty chilly, and conversation seems pretty silly. I feel so mean and brought. I'd rather have the blues than what I've got.
Mike watches the singer.
The room is dark and gloomy. You don't know what you're doing to me. Web has got me caught. I'd rather have the blues than what I've got.
Mike stops watching the act and turns back to the bar.
All night.
Say, man, you sure look beat. You look real lean, real wasted. What's got you, man? You don't look like you would it.
Give me a double bourbon and leave the bottle.
Sure.
Pulling for yourself.
Sure, anytime.
But all that comes out.
Who are we drinking to?
Nick.
Nick. Ba-ba-boom, pretty pow!
A glum Mike swigs back his drink.
The rain begins, and then comes light.
Later, Mike is slumped on the bar asleep. The singer is nearby. A guy in a fedora talks to the bartender and then leaves. The bartender approaches Mike.
Mike, come on.
He shakes him.
A fella just come in, said they got your girl. They got Velda. Told me to tell you.
Where is he?
I don't know, he cut out. He blew.
Mike begins to stagger away woozily.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Thanks, kid.
He lurches out of the empty bar. Tie loosened and outside the Pigalle now, he heads for his car and clambers into it with difficulty. Mike pulls up at the gas station, which has the attendant.
Jack, we're not good enough for you, huh?
Yeah, the ashtrays were all full. That girl I was with the other night, she gave you a letter to mail. Do you happen to know who it was addressed to?
Yeah. I just want to know who the lucky guy was. It was addressed to some joker named Mike.
Mike?
Mike hurriedly turns the car around on the garage forecourt. Mike rushes into Velda's dark apartment. Switching on a ceiling light and pulling it down over a desk, he sorts through mail, unaware of Sugar and Charlie sitting in the shadows. Mike opens a letter with "Remember Me" written on a sheet of paper.
Interesting letter, huh?
Good evening, Mr. Hammer.
Charlie points a gun.
We took a gander at it. Couldn't quite make it out.
Sugar coshes Mike, who falls to his knees.
Won't be no trouble this time, Mr. Hammer. I've been taking lessons. I was out for 2 hours after you flipped me. Couldn't move a muscle. Give me a hand, Charlie.
Yeah, sure. Lean on me if you like, huh? Feel okay?
Sugar picks up the note and follows Charlie and Mike out. In dull daylight, sea washes up on a deserted beach which borders a sand-covered road. Charlie's driving Mike's car with Mike sandwiched between him and Sugar. They pull up at a large two-storied wooden beach house. The black sedan is parked outside.
Well, here we are, Mr. Hammer.
Watch your step.
For a couple of cannons, you guys sure are polite.
We're here on this earth such a brief span. We might as well be.
Mike pushes Sugar away and makes a run for it. Charlie tries to trip Mike, who staggers down steps onto the beach. Sugar rugby tackles Mike, drags him up and whacks him. Charlie picks him up and whacks him. Mike wrestles free from the hoods and runs into the water. Sugar dives on him. As Mike gets up, Charlie decks him. The hoods haul a limp Mike out of the water and up the beach. His dragging feet leave a trail in the sand. Mike is spread-eagled face down on a single bed, his wrists and ankles tethered to the bedposts. Mike stirs as feet in fancy black shoes appear in the doorway.
Well, you are awake. Lie still. Why torment yourself? Who would you see? Someone you do not know. A stranger. What is it we are seeking? Diamonds? Rubies? Gold? Perhaps narcotics? How civilized this earth used to be. But as the world becomes more primitive, its treasures become more fabulous. Perhaps sentiment will succeed where greed failed. You will die, Mr. Hammer. But your friend, you can save her. Yes, you can. The young lady you picked up on the highway, she wrote you a letter. In it were two words. Remember me. She asks you to remember. What is it you must remember?
The guy prepares an injection.
Do not be alarmed, Mr. Hammer. It is only a harmless drug. Sodium pentothal, the truth serum. Under its influence, you will sleep. And while you sleep, your subconscious will provide the answer. And you will cry out what it is that you must remember.
The smart-suited guy, whose face Mike doesn't see, injects Mike in the leg. He pats Mike's leg.
Pleasant dreams, Mr. Hammer.
A shadow appears on the wall as someone enters Mike's room. It looms ever larger as the figure approaches the bed and sits down beside it on a chair. It's Carl. He cocks an ear to listen to Mike, then leans in and shakes him.
Remember me. What did she mean?
No, no. No, no. No.
Remember me. What did she mean?
Carl sits back and folds his arms. Time passes. The faceless guy enters.
Any luck?
Carl shakes his head. The other figure in a pinstriped suit leaves. Time passes. Mike, alone now, and with a commentary running in the next room, wriggles his right hand free from the ropes binding it to the bedpost. Mike looks towards the closed door, flexes his fingers, and then loosens the ropes before putting his hand back through them.
Hey!
Carl stands in the doorway with Charlie behind him. He nods the okay to Charlie, who moves away.
Back among the living, eh?
Carl sits beside the bed.
I got it figured.
You have?
Yeah.
Okay, let's have it.
Will you let her go?
Sure, take my word. Free as a bird. You want to talk?
I want to whisper.
So whisper.
Smirking, Carl leans into him. Mike frees his hand. Sugar and Charlie look out of an open window as they listen to the boxing.
Sugar!
Yes, Mr. Ravello?
He talked. He's yours.
Hearing the voice from the bedroom, Sugar passes his drink to Charlie and gleefully enters the dark room. He approaches the bed and looks down with a cruel smile as he reaches into his jacket pocket and takes out a flick knife. He thrusts the blade into the figure on the bed. It's Carl. Sugar suddenly spots Mike. Charlie rushes into the bedroom. He gapes, then draws a gun from his belt.
He still knew where he was, what he was doing.
Charlie moves across the room edgily. Sugar's slumped against drawers, his eyes staring, his mouth open. Charlie moves to the bed. Cupping a hand round Carl's chin, he turns his face towards him. Carl's eyes stare lifelessly. Charlie lets Carl's head drop back on the bed, then sees the window is wide open. Charlie starts on hearing the car. His eyes dart around as he stands wavering and looking scared. Mike tries to open his apartment door. The safety chain is on.
Carver, Carver. Carver.
I'm coming.
Carver.
I'm coming. I'm coming.
Smartly dressed, Lily runs to the door. Mike gapes at her as he steps inside.
Where'd you get those clothes?
Your friend Miss Wickman brought them.
Oh. When?
Yesterday. She brought some perfume, too. I feel almost human. Want to smell?
She leans into Mike as he pours a drink.
What is it? What's the matter?
He swigs his drink and grimaces.
What did she mean? Remember me.
He sits down on the sofa and picks up the book of sonnets from the coffee table. He flicks through to the marked page.
Read this.
He hands Lily the book.
Remember?
He nods.
Remember me when no more day by day. You tell me of a future that you plan.
She sits on the table.
Only remember me. You'll understand. But if the darkness and corruption leave a vestige of the thoughts that once we had.
Read that last part again.
But if the darkness and corruption leave a vestige of the thoughts that once we had.
Mike gets up, deep in thought.
Mike! Mike! Don't leave me!
They were at the door last night. They tried to get in.
They tried to get in. They tried to get in.
Hey. Better get your coat.
Lily beams and hurries off. Mike stands pensively. A tag marked Christina Bailey hangs on the handle of a mortuary chiller door. A bespectacled old guy in a lab coat opens the door and pulls out a covered body on a long tray. He pulls back the sheet so that Mike can inspect the body's face. Lily's behind Mike.
If the darkness and corruption leave a vestige of the thoughts that once we had. But if it's a thought, it's dead because she's dead. It's got to be a thing.
The man nods.
Something small, something she could hide. But where would she hide it? She didn't have time at the gas station. She swallowed it. Then if she swallowed it, you've got it.
The man nods to all Mike's statements, then slides the body back into the chiller. The man heads into an office. Mike and Lily follow. The man in thick-lensed round spectacles stands at a desk and takes an object from a drawer.
Close the door, please.
What is it?
The man puts out a hand. Mike peels banknotes from a wad and slams them on the desk. The man's hand is still extended. Mike peels off more notes. The man extends his hand again.
No, that's all you get. All right, I paid you for it. Now hand it over.
I didn't say I'd give it to you. As a matter of fact, I don't recall saying anything.
I want it. Hand it over.
I performed an autopsy on that young lady, and I found a key. But whatever it is that's locked away, I don't want it. You have to find a fence and split the take. That's too much trouble. All I want is the cash right here in my hand. So if you want this key, pay.
No more.
Suit yourself.
Mike slams the drawer shut on the coroner's hand as he puts the key back. Lily covers her ears. Mike increases the pressure on the drawer, then pushes the coroner away. Mike picks up the key and studies it.
H-A-C. H-A-C.
In bright sunshine, Mike pulls up in his Chevy Corvette with Lily.
You wait here, I'll be right out.
He walks up carpeted steps to the Hollywood Athletic Club, enters, and goes to reception.
May I help you, sir?
This key, what's it for?
Are you a member, sir?
No, just tell me about the key.
Pardon me, sir, if you're not a member.
Mike takes out his wad of notes and peels some off.
My dear sir.
Mike grabs him.
Now tell me about the key.
It's a locker key, sir.
Whose?
Just a minute, sir.
Mike shoves the porter away and picks up his money. Looking in a filing box.
It's,
Well, whose?
It's, Nicholas Raimondo. 10-year membership, sir.
Take me to it.
Yes, sir.
The elderly, bespectacled porter leads Mike to a locker room and stops by a locker.
This is it.
Mike hesitates before inserting the key in the lock. The top shelf is empty, but at the bottom of the tall, slim locker is a box-shaped metal case. Mike, his brow furrowed, glances at the porter, then squats and starts to undo the buckles of the leather straps which are around the case. The porter, in a spotted bow tie, watches intently as Mike removes the straps and carefully lifts off the lid of the case. Beneath it is another container. Mike starts to lift the lid of the container but removes his hands quickly.
It's hot.
Hot, sir?
Mike opens the lid a crack.
Ah!
Mike hurriedly shuts the lid when fierce white light bursts from the container. Mike nurses his wrist. He replaces the lid of the outer casing, then shuts the locker door.
Pardon me, sir. What is it?
I don't know, but whatever it is, keep away. Don't let anybody near.
Yes, sir.
Feeling his wrist again, Mike pockets the key and glances back briefly at the locker before walking away. Mike comes out of the club's canopied entrance to find the car empty.
Carver? Carver?
Tie loosened and looking weary, Mike scans up and down the street and then goes to his car. Holding his injured wrist stiffly, he opens the passenger door with his other hand and gets in. He shuffles into the driver's seat and pulls away. Pat's on the phone at Mike's, a cop's behind him.
Yeah. Yeah, but check that bar he goes to. Check his girl's apartment. Keep somebody on watch there in case he comes around. Just a minute. It's okay, he just came in. Where's the key?
What key?
The key you took from Doc Kennedy. I want it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The key's very important. Don't waste my time. Hand it over.
Is it as important as Velda?
If you hadn't sent Velda out to do your dirty work, she wouldn't be in trouble. Now give me the key.
Will you make a deal for her?
Please, the key.
Sure, you'll make a deal for her. Like you did for Christina. You held her under custody in a hospital and you let her get away. You let her get killed. The way Raimondo and Kowalski were killed. And Nick. And maybe Carver, too, for all I know.
Carver?
Yeah, surprised? What kind of an investigation you're running around here, anyway? Lily Carver, Christina Bailey's roommate.
We fished Carver's body out of the harbor over a week ago. You're so bright, working on your own. You penny ante gumshoe. You thought you saw something big and you tried to horn in. What about this dame who's passing herself off as Carver?
Mike reaches despondently into Pat's top pocket for a packet of cigarettes. Pat notices a burn on the underside of Mike's wrist and grabs his hand. Pat studies it, and he and Mike exchange grave looks.
How'd you get that?
Mike stares defiantly at him. Pat blinks and looks uneasy.
Now listen, Mike. Listen carefully. I'm going to pronounce a few words. They're harmless words. Just a bunch of letters scrambled together. But their meaning is very important. Try to understand what they mean. Manhattan Project, Los Alamos, Trinity.
Mike's defiant gaze evaporates and he lowers his eyes. A stunned look of realization spreads across his features, and he stares zombie-like into the middle distance as he slowly takes the key from his jacket pocket. He hands it to Pat, who accepts it, and then addresses the rest of his plain-clothed and uniformed colleagues, who are also in the apartment.
Let's go.
What about Velda?
What about her?
What about him?
Let him go to hell. Let the big slob sit there and think about his girl. What's likely to happen to her?
Pat glowers at Mike and starts to walk out.
I didn't know.
Pat turns back to him.
You didn't know. Do you think you'd have done any different if you had known?
Pat turns on his heel. Mike, looking crestfallen and with his loosened striped tie askew around his neck, goes to the phone. A phone rings in the Hollywood Athletic Club. In the locker room, the locker is open and empty. The door lies on the floor. Nearby, the porter, eyes open and staring, is spread-eagled on his back, a pool of blood by his head. Mike hangs up. He stands pensively and then, still deep in thought, turns away and removes his jacket. Night. Mike's car is parked outside Dyker's place. Mike jogs nimbly up the many steps to the house. Mike enters Dyker's apartment and turns on the light. Scanning the dismal sitting room, Mike spots a cigarette burning in an ashtray and smiles to himself.
Dyker! Ray Dyker!
Mike heads out, leaving the light on. As soon as he's gone, Dyker enters the room. He takes a pack of cigarettes from his pocket, sits down, and lights up. Putting the match into the ashtray, he starts when he sees the other cigarette burning. Dyker hurriedly puts his new cigarette down and accidentally knocks the other to the floor. He looks about the room tensely. His face still marked, he gets up and hurries out of the front door. He bumps into Mike, who's waiting on the landing. Dyker backs away, but Mike grabs him and slaps him round the face.
The man who pulled out the belt, what's his name? What's his name?
William Mist! His name is William Mist!
Mike shoves Dyker aside and goes. Mike strides up to Mist's gallery of modern art. Mike breaks in. Mist sits up in bed. He turns on the light. Mike strolls along the marble gallery floor past paintings. He bumps into a low table, knocking it over. Mustachioed Mist gapes and reaches for a bottle of pills. It's empty and marked Dr. G.E. Soberin, for sleeping. Mist gets up. Mike continues through the gallery. Mist frantically gulps down medicine in his bathroom. Liquid trickles down Mist's chubby chin as he gulps alternately from a bottle and then a beaker of water. Mike continues his measured progress and begins to climb a flight of stairs. He runs up to the bathroom, tries the door, then kicks it in.
Where's Velma?
Where is she? Where is she?
He drags Mist to the bedroom.
Where is she?
Where is she?
Where is she? Where is she?
Mist flops around and Mike shoves him away. Mist, in a silk dressing gown, is out for the count on sleeping medicine. Mike switches on a lamp, then turns on a radio on the bedside cabinet. He turns up the volume. Pacing around the elegant room, Mike finds a file on a desk. He flips through the file and throws it down. He then spots a pill bottle amongst toiletry bottles. He studies the bottle, which bears Soberin's name. Mike puts the bottle down and goes over to the bedside cabinet again. He picks up the empty bottle of pills and recalls Velda's words.
And when Orban just happened to pick him up, he dropped a few names. Does that make your ears stand up? Want to hear them? But Dr. Soberin, does that do anything for you? But Dr. Soberin, does that do anything for you? But Dr. Soberin, does that do anything for you? Dr. Soberin, Dr. Soberin.
Mike finds Soberin's number in a file alongside a phone on the cabinet.
Dr. Soberin's office.
Dr. Soberin, please.
I'm sorry, Dr. Soberin isn't available at present. He's referring all his calls to this answering service. Why don't you call another doctor?
I've got to get him. It's important.
I'm sorry, I can't help you. He might be at his beach cottage, but there's no phone.
The fancy black shoes.
There is something sad and melancholy about trips. I always hate to go away,
But one has to find some new place, or it would be impossible to be sad and melancholy again.
Lily.
What's in the box? What's in the box?
Curiosity killed a cat, and it certainly would have you if you'd followed your impulse to open it. You did very well to call me when you did.
Yes, I know. But what's in it?
You have been misnamed, Gabrielle. You should have been called Pandora. She had a curiosity about a box and opened it and let loose all the evil in the world.
Never mind about the evil. What's in it?
Did you ever hear of Lot's wife?
No.
No. Well, she was told not to look back, but she disobeyed and she was changed into a pillar of salt.
Well, I just want to know what it is.
Would you believe me if I told you? Would you be satisfied?
Maybe.
The head of the Medusa. That's what's in the box. And whoever looks on her will be changed not into stone, but into brimstone and ashes. But of course, you wouldn't believe me. You'd have to see for yourself, wouldn't you?
Where are we going?
Where I am going, it is not possible for you to go. I had no illusion about deceiving you. You have the feline perceptions that all women have. Would you mind moving? You're sitting on my coat.
Whatever is in that box, it must be very precious. So many people have died for it.
Yes, it is very precious.
I want half.
I agree with you. You should have at least half. You deserve it. For all the creature comforts you've given me. But unfortunately, the object in this box cannot be divided.
Then I'll take it off.
She draws a gun on him.
If you don't mind.
Mustachioed, sobering in a pinstriped suit, clutches his side.
Gabrielle. Listen to me. As if I were Cerberus, barking with all his heads at the gates of hell. I will tell you where to take it. But don't. Don't open the box.
Sobering falls to the floor. Lily, Gabrielle, wears a dispassionate expression and goes over to the box with straps around it. She puts down her gun and starts to undo the straps. Mike bursts in. Gabrielle stops what she's doing and smiles.
Hello, Mike.
Where's Velda?
Gabrielle picks up her gun.
Come in.
Her demented smile fades.
Come in.
Mike, eyeing the gun aimed at him, moves tentatively.
Kiss me, Mike. I want you to kiss me. Kiss me. The liar's kiss that says I love you, it means something else. You're good at giving such kisses. Kiss me.
She shoots Mike in the belly as he approaches. He drops to the floor in the lamplit room. Gabrielle puts down her gun again and removes the final strap from the box. She quickly checks round the box and slowly starts to remove the lid of the outer covering. She puts the lid aside and makes to remove the lid of the second box. She takes her hand away sharply. She rubs together the fingertips of the hand that touched the box and looks pensive. Gabrielle then begins to ease the lid of the box open by its handle. The fierce white light engulfs Gabrielle. Mike comes to and sits up. Mike crawls to a door as flames start to leap in front of Gabrielle.
Hello!
The roaring flames engulf Gabrielle. Mike staggers along a landing. Barely able to walk, Mike manages to batter down the door Velda's hammering on. Clasping each other, Velda helps Mike downstairs and out of the beach house, whose interior glows and pulsates with white light. Mike's arm is around Velda's shoulder as she lugs him down a flight of wooden stairs outside the house. White smoke rises from the glowing house, whose light illuminates Velda and Mike as they lurch along the beach. The light pulsates on and off as Velda struggles to help Mike walk through the night. They fall, but Velda holds Mike up again and they continue their stumbling journey. They turn and watch as the beach house explodes in clouds of luminous smoke and flames, a white arc pulsating around it. Velda clings on to an unsteady Mike as they stand clear of the house and up to their thighs in the sea. The end. ITFC audio description by Helen Vasey.